All right. Hey, everybody. We're 3 minutes late. I apologize, but it's all right. We're working on some mic stuff. Welcome to the next episode of the Litecoin Underground podcast. Today, we're going to have Martha Bueno in. I'm going to call her just a jack of all libertarian trades. I don't even know if, I mean, maybe I'm jumping the gun a bit, but we're going to kind of learn who she is, kind of her involvement. Obviously, this is a crypto show, a little bit of conversation about crypto and some of the other topics that she's interested in. So Martha, welcome. I appreciate you coming in. I recalled to her that I had a bizarre interaction with her running into her at an airport a few years ago, and she doesn't remember it. So that shows you how much. She's more important than I am, is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know if I always find these bio things for me to introduce you maybe is less valuable than you just doing it yourself. Just tell us a little bit about you and kind of your Twitter activity and kind of who you are.
Sure. So again, like you said, Martha Bueno, and I got into politics about 20 years ago when I realized that I didn't quite fit in the Republican or the Democrat category. And I was like, there's got to be something else out there. And an uncle of mine is like, you sound like a libertarian. I was like, what? Are you insulting me? And so learned all about libertarianism and went headfirst. I've been a lifetime member. Beyond that, I've been an entrepreneur, a mother of four. And about 10 years ago, I got really bitten by the bug to just go out and make a difference. I've been following Ross Ulbricht's case, became very involved with that, especially in the last few years, as his mother is a personal friend of mine. And just all things freedom. We briefly mentioned before we got started, circumcision. You know, I loved what Bitcoin was when I first ran into it as a libertarian. I was like, wait, what? This currency that didn't exist and now it does, and it can circumvent the government, and we can go around it and not pay taxes and use it to buy things. So just all things liberty is basically how I would describe myself. I'm fascinated by all of these subjects. And how humans, you know, how we can change our world, you know, how we can make our world better and more free.
Well, so I know an important element for you, and I don't know if you grew up in Cuba. Not sure that you did, but your family, did you grow up there? And then you guys?
I didn't. No? I was actually born in the U.S. My parents were both born and raised in Cuba. My dad was a political prisoner and my mom broke him out of jail. I mean, liberty literally runs in my veins. We then moved to Venezuela, where for those who don't know, Venezuela is now also a socialist communist country. So my parents had to, in their relatively short lives, have had to escape socialism, communism twice. And so I say that it follows me around, and I'm hoping to break that cycle of abuse before it reaches the U.S., although it's kind of already here.
So in Cuba, you have two domestic terrorists that were your parents, right? One a political. So why would, can I ask why he was a political prisoner? Did he speak his mind?
Yeah. He did. He was a young man in college, and he was forced to accept. He had to take a class in Leninism and Marxism, and he was like, "No, this is wrong. This is terrible. And if you do not except Leninism, Marxism in Cuba, you cannot graduate with a diploma. Therefore, you can also not work in any of the government controls every aspect. You cannot work unless you work for the government. If you don't accept Leninism, Marxism as your Lord and Savior, you basically, the rest of your life in Cuba, you are a non-person. So my dad, as a young man, was like, I'm getting out of here. Married my mom and was like, let's go. My mom's like, okay. And then he got caught trying to escape. And at that point, my mom had a baby, and my grandmother was the one that set up the whole like escape plan. My grandmother and my dad kind of spoke a language amongst themselves, so she used that to coordinate everything, and then didn't go through with it at the last minute. My mom was like, fuck it, I'll do it, and she did. But yeah, he went to jail for essentially not wanting to be a Cuban citizen anymore, for wanting to leave, for wanting better for himself and his family, for, you know, refusing to accept that communist mentality, for refusing to accept that Marxism is good, for refusing to accept the greater good, which, by the way, I woke up today and all of Cuba has no energy. After 65 years of a brutal communist dictatorship, that I hear all these Marxist Americans, communist Americans, socialist Americans, and even everyday Americans are like, well, Cuba, it's because of the embargo. How is the power grid in Cuba the responsibility of the United States? They don't have access to anything. Cuba's an island that is surrounded by fish, and yet people are starving because their government says they can't even fish. They're not entitled to, they're not allowed to. If they go to the ocean without permission, they will get thrown in jail. I mean, it's just a horrible system. And I, again, going back to how I love all things freedom, it's innate in me, because this human right that we have to be able to feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, defend ourselves, America has all of these things and we're throwing it away. We're like, it's not that important. You know what's important? Not hurting people's feelings. No, the right to your being able to say what you need to say is a fundamental freedom. And I refuse to go down without a fight. I'm done, you know, running away from these things. My parents ran away from Cuba. Granted, they didn't have the opportunities. They didn't have the free speech. They didn't have, you know, social media. They didn't have all these things that we have here. They had to run away. In Venezuela, it wasn't their country. My dad saw the writing on the wall. He's like, we're getting out before this happens to me again. We did. And now in the U.S., you know, if I don't stand and fight for this, I'm concerned for what's going to happen here.
Well, there is no running away. That's the scary part. Like, you're running out of places to go. Like,
where else are we going to go? Yeah.
Yeah. Where are we going to go? Where can we go that the U.S. empire won't reach you?
Yeah. So
one day Mars, hopefully. But
you can't have freedom of speech.
unless Elon makes Mars an American colony, in which case, you know.
Yeah.
Then not even Mars.
Well, he can probably only launch his ships with the permission of the federal government. So,
and the money of the federal government, of course. You know,
I saw they were trying to shut him down in California. Did you see that?
No, so I did
actually.
Because of his his platform, basically, that they don't like his platform and his politics, and so they're essentially trying to figure out a way to not allow him to launch his ships. And it's like, this is crazy. It's just gotten crazy. But I was going to ask you actually, like, if there were particular stories, like, I almost imagined like you as a child and your dad telling you these stories of oppression, and like, there had to be a few that probably stuck with you that you go, like, that really put a spotlight on how messed up the government is. Maybe there's so many of them just right there telling us that you're not allowed to.
No,
you can't fish in the U.S. without a license. So, I mean, you know, it's similar, but you don't go to jail for it, right?
Right. Well, I'm actually laughing because I think it's the experience of most of my Cuban friends. We all have the same experience, which is our parents don't talk to us about these things. I think it's so painful to them, you know, and my parents, my mom left when she was 21 years old, left Cuba, left her parents behind, left her siblings behind, left everything behind. So I think the experience of doing it sounds heroic when I tell it, but the actual reality of it is it's trauma, it's pain. They went through so much. So they don't actually speak about it. Everything I know has been by either pulling it out of them, hearing it from my grandmother, whose name also was Martha Bueno, just without the H. You know, she was like so proud of the story of how she, you know, put all of that together. So that story I heard from her directly. But really, my parents never told me any of this. And most of the information I got was just from observing. You know, my grandfather, whom I lived with in his final years, he would stand at his doorstep and he'd be like, I'm just here until I can go back to Cuba. You know, I just want to go home, go see my friends, go live my life. Like, I don't want to die here. It would be horrible for me to die here. I want to die in Cuba. I want to die where, you know, I have my people, and so those type of stories, you know, that's what kind of got me to dig further and to, you know, ask my parents, like, what? And then
is there an element of shame to it, you think? Like, they feel like I left people behind, and I didn't stay and fight, and maybe I should have. Like, I wonder if there's some.
I don't think they either of them thought that they could stay and fight. And the reality is, my father experienced his grandfather shot in the head in front of him and his farm before they intervened the farm. So I don't think that there was shame in leaving. I think that there is so much pain. And I think that that's kind of one of the things that I have a hard time conveying to other people. And they're like, well, but, you know, some socialism is good. Some, and it's like, you don't understand until you are forced to leave. And I think that it's been so long, so many generations that Americans have lived here that they no longer have ties to that land. And so they don't necessarily have these subjects come up, and they don't realize that everybody in America is here for the same reason that my parents left. They're here because they were some kind of political persecution or famine, or something was happening in their country that got them to leave everything they knew and travel to what back then would have been the new world, but leave everything behind and come settle this new life. That takes something that I just, you know, I can't describe other than saying, you know, cojones. It takes balls to get up and leave everything you know and travel to some new place and start a new life that you don't know what that life is going to look like. And so, you know, so many Americans have this story in their history, but it's not told. And maybe it's not told for the same reason that my parents really don't talk about it often. Pain, suffering. Maybe it's just been so many generations and we're kind of used to it. America's free. You don't have to worry about that. Of course we're free. Of course we're free. And so, you know, we take it for granted. And so I think it takes immigrants to be like, excuse me, my coffee is here. Oh, rock mug. Oh, thank you. Perfect timing. So, you know, it's just, I think that we forget these stories. We forget to tell our children. We forget to tell our children and our children, my own children grow up and they're like, oh my God, mom, you're so over the top. Like, this isn't going to happen here. And it's like, listen,
no, it's happening.
You don't know that.
You mentioned animals in Canada, and you mentioned when you talked about kind of being unpersoned, if you didn't comply with the Leninist doctrine, right?
Right.
I think there's a lot of that that's invading. I mean, it's invaded like the universities today in the U.S. I think it's invaded Canada much more so than the U.S., but that should be like a little bit of a canary in the coal mine. Like, hey, if this country that we see as a equal, as far as these are, I mean, we're the same cultures for the most part. If they're at the point where you don't feel comfortable at work talking about a political topic because you might get like reprimanded or lose a job, literally like the collective will just be like, oh, he's one of them. Let's get rid of him. That's scary, because you're talking about you're unpersoning someone. You're making it impossible for them to make a living for purely just expressing an opinion, you know? And so there's certain speech and certain thoughts you're not allowed to have.
Right. It even goes beyond that. We saw with the Canadian truck drivers where they won't just cancel you. They'll cancel your bank accounts. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is something that we experience in Cuba, even to this day, and more so to this day, now that they have technology, which is one of the issues that kind of brought my two worlds together, right? My crypto world and my Cuban world, which is when the Bitcoin conference asked a Cuban developer to come speak on their stage. And it was Cuba Pay, which is a service that will literally take Bitcoin and give the people of Cuba MLC, which is their, I call it Chuck E. Cheese coin. It's basically a Visa gift card type of situation, just like a plastic card with currency that only works at government stores. And so, you know, it's just, we are being transformed little by little. We're being put to this position where now you just have digital currency, you know, a CBDC type of situation. It's slowly turning us over into this kind of just, oh yeah, you know, this is normal. It's normal for them to close out your bank account. It's normal for them to tell you what you can and can't support. Yeah. It's normal for them to tell you what you can and can't speak about. I mean, it's 1984. In live and living color right now, and I think we're not awake enough to what's going on.
It's scary how much the groupthink is pervasive, right? People look at this stuff and they're like, good for them, like screw the truckers, you know what I mean? They're terrorists.
I don't understand that. I don't understand that mentality. Same with, for example, Roger Ver in our, you know, our community, Bitcoin Jesus. How many people did we not see go, good, he got arrested? And I'm like, oh, what? Whether you agree with Roger Ver or not is irrelevant. How can anyone stand up and say they were happy, or, you know, oh, well, too bad, sucks to be you, Roger Ver. I mean, honestly,
it's not scary that the United States can reach out anywhere in the world and grab you. That's
to a non-citizen.
Yeah, that's scary to me.
I mean, we should have seen this with Julian Assange, who thankfully is now free. But he is an Australian citizen who never stepped foot in America. And America could capture him and keep him for, what was it, 10, 12 years? Yeah. I mean, it's 8 years. I'm not sure on the length. But yeah, it's crazy. And I mean, Roger Ver gave up his American citizenship. I believe now it's 10 years ago. And they're like, oops, wait. You missed a few zeros. We're coming back for you. And yeah. and the craziest thing, because I expect that from the government. What I didn't expect that was from this community. I believed that our community, our crypto community in general, was about freedom. I mean, what's the point of cryptocurrency if not to be able to decentralize and become about freedom? And so when I saw that, I mean, I honestly, I've never been so disappointed in my life.
Yeah, there's, I mean, you know, I will say that I don't think that was a loud portion of people, but there were certainly people in the community that you're like, that don't seem to have any loyalty. Or yeah, almost they have this hatred for Roger Ver, where I started out before the hard fork is when I was first introduced to it. And he was one of the guys that I still look at and say, he influenced me to not only be interested in Bitcoin, but to look at how the government functions and how money runs the system, how this control of the money system is so damn, like just so, it's so awful. Right. And, that to not acknowledge like, hey, this guy was out there speaking the real shit. Mm-hmm. And that's, he didn't gotten robbed. That's what's gotten removed. Nothing,
right.
Go ahead.
He didn't get the nickname Bitcoin Jesus for nothing. The guy onboarded so many people. He orange pilled so many people.
I think it's a misnomer, though. I think he's not Bitcoin Jesus. I want to say that Bitcoin Jesus is Ross. I want to say that he's Bitcoin Apostle. Doesn't sound as great, but he's the one that went around, you know, telling everybody else, like, you got to get on board with this church. I think he's like our first apostle, but whatever. You know, neither here nor there, but I just think that the Bitcoin Jesus part is a little bit of a misnomer. I honestly think that that would be Ross, but whatever. I won't make a big deal about it.
Yeah. Well, but the root of what should get people interested in these things is that idea of this non-government money, this no third party, this censorship resistant stuff. And that message has also been kind of erased since 2017. Particularly 2021, it was like, it's now just ETFs and banks and how big can the money be? And let's have government.
Yeah.
And it's like, it really has gotten extracted. And I think, but there are some communities left. And I think, you know, obviously BCH is one of them, which is kind of why I reached out to you, because you had said something about them. And I know you and.
I do like BCH. I do like Monero. I do like the communities that are about the freedom. Which is what I thought Bitcoin was originally, you know, and I think my first Bitcoin conference that I went to, I was like, wow, these people get it. And then over the years, as I've gone to more of them, I'm like, I'm not so sure. And so many people at these, at the last Bitcoin conference, I was out handing out these shirts. I'm just going to, you know, it's a little controversial. Trump said he would pardon Ross. He was actually all of the candidates except for Kamala at this part have said that they would pardon Ross. So you can't go wrong except for one particular person. But, you know, I was giving out
anti-free speech.
Right. Exactly. I mean, only one of them is really like, oh, my God, we can't let that happen. I'm not, you know, I'm a libertarian. I would love for us to be able to have a legitimate third party candidate that can run against the two majors. But, you know. At this conference, so many people, as I was handing them a shirt, and they're like, who's Ross? And I'm like, what do you mean, who's Ross? Like, what do you think, what do you know of Bitcoin if you don't know how our first use case happened? You know, you're at this conference, you spent money, you flew across the country, you came here, and you don't know who Ross Ulbricht is. I think we've done a terrible job as a community of keeping that spirit alive of, you know, we have our people who are being targeted. And if we're not standing behind them, what are we doing?
Yeah, 100%. It's more of a political movement than a financial movement. And that it should be, at least, right? That's where, and that's why, like, honestly, one of the reasons I wanted to reach out to you, and I'm, I've been doing this. I do Twitter spaces. I've been doing them for, honestly, it's been 3 years. I can't believe every week I do a Twitter spaces, but, you know, we talk a lot about crypto and of course, like the news that's going on in crypto, but we always gravitate towards these types of topics. And I do feel like if we aren't branching out as crypto community, if we just talk in our own circles all day, we're not going to get anywhere. And the easiest step to take is people who are libertarians or like gold bugs and silver, who kind of understand why these things have value in the first place. Mm-hmm. But they kind of, I do have a lot of questions about, not that you represent the Libertarian Party. I know you were, I want to say you.
I don't think they'd like that if I did.
You're probably more aware of the drama because from what I observe it from a distance and it just feels like it's a complete shit show half the time because they just, it's difficult. You're asking a bunch of people who don't like order and
individuals
rule, you know, to be told what to do. Yeah. To all of a sudden, you know, form around it. So why do you think though, like as a general principle that the libertarian community is not more vocal about cryptocurrency, that they don't say, hey, let's pick one thing we can actually do and start controlling our own actions and acting independently of the state. And maybe some other things will fall in line later, but let's create our own diaspora inside the United States, right? Let's all interact, communicate via this money that we can use without permission.
I think, you know, you kind of hit on the main reason. So why haven't the Libertarian Party been able to do more or do a diaspora or be able to? And I think the reason is because we are so independent. We are independent people with independent minds, and you don't tell me what to do and I won't tell you what to do. And so it's very difficult. The movement itself is just so incredibly difficult. If you look at, let's say, the Democratic Party, somebody has a plan and everybody falls in line. Right now, they chose Kamala Harris and everybody's like, yes, it's Kamala Harris. Nobody's out there complaining. They removed Biden. I'm not going to vote for him because Democrats are just in line. Like, yep, this is our, you know, our goal and we are going to do it. They're far more organized and they just allow the leaders to lead and everybody else follows. Libertarians were not about to do that. There are communities around the United States. Here, Miami turned into a very large Bitcoin community. I don't know that necessarily like libertarians, although most of them that I speak to are very libertarian. You know, we have the people that moved here include people like Tatiana Moroz, excuse me, who wrote the first Bitcoin jingle. I mean, they're very libertarians. They've been fighting for these things for a long time. But then everybody else that has kind of come into this movement have come in for Bitcoin, not necessarily the libertarian angle of it. And so I think it's just, you know, politics in general is just very difficult. But then politics, mm-hmm. you know, when you're also being targeted, you don't know who to trust. I think it's just very, very difficult. And also we know things. We're libertarians. We've been around. We research. We know what happens when you build a compound. Are you kidding me? Talk about the opposite of decentralization. If you build a community of freedom people, chances are they're going to Waco or Ruby Ridge you. So and I don't think anybody's willing to, I mean, and especially the Bitcoin community. Now they're all rich, right? Like those people that got into it for the financial or held Bitcoin, they all have a lot of money and they're not willing to risk it to create this thing. I think it's just human nature, unfortunately. I think there are a lot of people. I say that with a big asterisk next to it because there are a lot of really good people that are putting a lot on the line, not just for Bitcoin, not just for Monero, not just for their, you know, crypto, but for their freedom.
Litecoin, you're on a Litecoin thing.
Litecoin, et cetera. Sorry, I mean, all of them. You know, there's so many people that are putting things forward, but they have to be cautious. And so I struggle with this myself because sometimes I censor myself knowing this is going to become a problem. I mean, I don't want to say certain things because I know that the US government is watching me. And how do I know this? Well, my 78-year-old mother's phone was confiscated from her when she was leaving the Miami International Airport. And people are like, well, is it a coincidence? I don't know. You tell me. But, you know, for 4 months now, my mom has been without her phone. Why? Ooh. The government can't tell me. Oh, yeah, 4 months they've taken her phone and they haven't given it back. She's 78 years old, has never been political. I think she's been registered as a Republican and, you know, done nothing more than vote for her life since she's, you know, become a citizen of the United States. And yet people around me get targeted. I myself have been targeted. So of course I have to self-censor sometimes and not go and say all of these things. So imagine somebody that has, you know, a lot of money because of Bitcoin, and they see where Ross is. They see what's happening to Roger Ver. They see what's happening. I don't blame them for not coming out and being like, rah, rah, the United States government sucks. You know, like, we have to be careful. So why isn't there a bigger community? Probably because of the United States government. Probably because people don't want to be murdered. Probably because people don't want all their assets taken from them. Probably because they don't want to be canceled. Lots of reasons. So I don't blame the libertarians. I don't blame the Libertarian Party. You know, we have a few Harriet Tubmans in our movement, right? We've got some really amazing people. Ross Ulbricht, to me, is the biggest. He took the biggest fall for all of us. Not only did he make cryptocurrencies a thing where they were not before, but he's taken the largest fall, 240 years in a cage, for simply having this belief. And the judge who sentenced him, Judge Catherine Forrest, said that his beliefs were dangerous, which means that I'm dangerous in her mind, which means that most of us are dangerous in their mind. And so, you know, we do have these bigger than life personalities who have gone before us, and they've gotten, you know, cut down. So I am very cautious when I say that, you know, we're not doing enough, because it's easy to say we're not doing enough. It's really hard to do more.
Yeah. Understandable. Yeah. And I think it's funny, cause I don't take what I do as having, I don't know, I probably take it less seriously than I should. And cause I don't have a huge platform, but I am consistently communicating. We do consistently talk about the kind of the long arm of the state. And, you know, I guess if I were to have a tagline, it would be this, that the government, that, you know, control the money supply is oxygen for government. It cannot survive in its current state without it. Mm-hmm. And I think that message doesn't sound that dangerous, but as people, if they start to understand that this taxation and spending system that we're under is leading to socialism, is leading to ultimate control over everything, because you can't, they don't create anything. They can only take. I know. We are a socialist country. I do.
We're there. Say something the government doesn't like on your platform. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
When I was talking to one of the biggest, like, mind breaking moments that I ever had was my aunt who grew up in Cuba. The first time she was able to make it to the United States, my mom was able to get her out, and she came here, and we had like a conversation, 4 o'clock in the morning. We're outside having this conversation. And I'm like, but tell me more. And she's like, well, you know, in Cuba, we can't hunt or fish without the permission of the government. And I'm like, same here. In Cuba, we can't say anything without being censored by the government. Same here. In Cuba, if we do something against the government, they can take our financial means. Same here. And I'm going down this list, and I'm like, you know, the only difference really is the degree by which they do it. And as of late, I think the United States is just kind of doing it out in the open. It's no longer a dirty little secret. You know, more people today know about things like Ruby Ridge and Waco, Texas, and the Tuskegee experiments and MK Ultra. And they're still like, yeah, you know, but they wouldn't possibly do that to me. Yeah, they would. And they do.
They may be doing it all the time. I do think there's some kind of massive campaigns to collectively, I don't say brainwash, but certainly make people not see reality for what it is.
And up the ante, right?
Yeah,
because and up the ante in terms of what they can get away with, as long as people are accepting of what the government is asking, they'll keep doing it and they'll keep pushing.
Even if they don't accept, what's the alternative? Because if you go, for example, to the Capitol to protest because you think that potentially the election was fraudulent, you're now years in jail without due process. And so what did that do? That curbed the next time, because that's what happens in Cuba. I see it all the time. They had this huge protest. The entire island in 2021 over COVID was out on the streets protesting. And what did they do? They beat and they repressed so many people. They gave 20-year sentences to even children that were out. Over 1,000 people, over 300 kids were put into jails for 20 plus years And so now there's no protest because you're scared. And we did the same thing here. And it's like, well, but the United States isn't so bad. How long are we going to say the United States isn't so bad before we realize it kind of is?
Right.
We're doing the same thing. So,
they're talking about, what John Kerry was saying the other day, how he was opposed to the First Amendment. How, like, so you guys have to fight for it, right? You got to fight.
You know what he said? He goes, it's really hard to have total control when you can't censor speech. You're like, holy shit, they want total control.
They want total control. Hillary Clinton said the same thing, though. And, you know, this is something that they've been saying for a while. It's like, we're going to take all your guns. And then, you know, we're like, hey, they want to take our guns. They're like, they didn't mean that. They just meant AR-15s. You know what? A hunting rifle, that's not what they're trying to come after. They're trying to change the narrative and make it seem like this is normal. You are the abnormal one. You're the one who wants little kids murdered. You know, you're the one who wants this to happen. You're so evil because you have this fetish for guns. And it's like, can't we see how they've been doing this over and over? There's not a single subject. I dare anyone to find a subject, anything, any topic that the United States government hasn't taken over and kind of involved itself in. You know, everything from our education to how we grow our plants to how we are, you know, our health, every aspect, our TVs, are how we communicate. They're in every one of our platforms. They're everywhere. They are so involved in everything we do. You can't even build a house unless you get permission from them. You can't build a house on your land that you purchased and you own outright. And by the way, you'll never own it outright because if you don't pay your taxes, you know, what happens? They take it.
Yep.
So it's just so incredible that we've gotten to this point. And I say these things and it's like, nah, but we're not there yet. No, I think we are. I think it's just hard to realize it. I think that it's hard for us to like wake up one day and be like, I think we're there. I think we are in a totalitarian state pretty much. I mean, we have more freedoms than other countries. Sure. Freedoms than other countries. You're able to go about your life. You're able to do your rat race, everyday existence, go out, get your job, take your kids to daycare. You know, you can do all of these things, but the moment you start protesting, then they're going to come after you.
Well, you know, we're going to do a sidebar because I think this is a good stopping point.
Yes.
And we wanted to create a new segment in our thing to do like Litecoin, the vital statistics. And I'm going to give you a little bit because obviously you don't know much about Litecoin, I don't think.
I am not that familiar, so I appreciate
that's it. That's fair. But you may, while he goes through this, I think the thing to probably know about Litecoin is that, you know, it was created. It just had its 13th birthday. It's really the second oldest cryptocurrency to exist. It's never had any downtime. It's the most used cryptocurrency on BitPay, and it's like third on BitRefill. It's one of the few that's on all platforms. So if you go PayPal, Venmo, whatever, not that that's the way you want to use this stuff, but just to kind of give you an idea how kind of...
What wallet do you use for Litecoin?
It's funny you mention that because the little logo, the one spot, we do have a sponsor of our show. It's Cake Wallet. So you may be familiar with Cake Wallet. They have BCH. Course. And they actually just are on Monday. On Monday, they're going to enable MWeb, or we call it VPM, virtual private money, which is a layer, an extension block on Litecoin that allows you to transact like with Monero. There are no amounts. There's no addresses. So you can publicly share your address and receive it and not worry that someone can look at your funds like they can with BTC or BCH, right? Well, I guess now is as good a time as any to talk to you about Cake Wallet. Yes, you heard right. You may have heard the announcements. I hope you have. Mimblewimble has been added to Cake Wallet. Mimblewimble, MWeb, VPM, virtual private money, Mimblewimble extension blocks, whatever you want to call it. It's the new privacy layer that's on Litecoin, and it's finally come to mobile with Cake Wallet. They did an awesome implementation, really took the time to make sure the user experience was right. It was easy, understandable. So now you can get that extra added layer of privacy using your Litecoin that you really couldn't get before. So please go download Cake Wallet today. They've been doing everything they can to make the user experience for Litecoiners, Bitcoiners, Monerans, whatever we call ourselves, better for everybody. And they're adding features that enhance privacy and really just make this make these assets as usable as possible. So go check them out and download it. And thanks, as always, for listening to the show. I mean, in a main chain Litecoin, you still it functions the same as Bitcoin. And all, I guess, basically Litecoin is Bitcoin times four. So it's the blocks are four times faster. There's four times as many. I guess it was the BCH before BCH existed, right? And probably the biggest thing to just keep in mind with it, the difficult path BCH has is that it's always competing with Bitcoin because they use the same mining equipment. Where Litecoin is a different algorithm, so it uses a totally different computational model. I guess their mining system is different. So that you're not competing. It's more like it's not competing for the same space. It's still competing in the market, but it's not competing on that mining level. And so, yeah, it's been quietly getting adopted. Like, the price has been very flat for a long time. We're having a nice day today, but
a nice week.
Yeah. What is the price generally for?
Right now, it's at like $75.
Ooh, so it's affordable enough for people to get into it at this point still.
Yeah, well, so like Bitrefill, I don't know if you know, actually, I saw the name up here on my board. We did an interview with them, and they've been seeing a lot of growth all over the world in Litecoin. And really where it is working well for people is in these places like South America, Africa, you know, Middle East and Asia.
All the things you thought Bitcoin would do, and then it stopped in 2017-ish.
Yeah, the price has gotten so out of control. And what's happened actually is like stable coins have started to get fairly expensive to send. Litecoin's less than a penny. It's like 7/10 of a penny for a transaction. So it's filling that role.
I appreciate it. I mean, I think diversification of your coins is always important. And, you know, a lot of times it's hard to follow and keep. And I consider myself fairly informed. So the fact that I hadn't looked into Litecoin is completely my fault.
No, but I do appreciate it.
And I've been using Cake Wallet, so there's literally no excuse. but yeah, great. Thank you. I appreciate it. And I look forward to hearing more updates on it because I do think that we need more information, especially across the different coins. We kind of get, you know, stuck into like just one.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, Emil.
Yeah, this week was a huge week for Litecoin, actually. The first ETF application was filed by Canary Capital. So, I mean, if this goes through, then we'll have an easy way to onboard big financial institutions. So it'll be a great source of liquidity and obviously extremely positive for price action.
It's a bit of a stamp of approval, I think, which is, again, sadly, that's what people do require, right? They need to be told, this is okay.
People are afraid. They're skittish, especially when they see things like Monero being delisted left and right. Having a big financial institution supporting it and getting the green light from the government, you know, fingers crossed. That's what caused, so the price is up 15% this week on that news. Where, you know, Bitcoin had a pretty good week too, but it's only up 9%. And the other thing that's cool with Litecoin is it's merge mined. I don't know if you knew this, but it's with one miner, you're mining Litecoin, Dogecoin, and now Bell's coin. Interestingly, Dogecoin is up 30% this week. Bell's coin is up 36% this week.
Damn.
Yeah, all on this news.
Bell's chain.
I mean,
I love that you guys just mentioned Dogecoin and my mind immediately went to this puppy that just walked onto my property. And I've been joking because like this probably 3-4 month old puppy just walked onto my property, like weirdest thing ever. Somebody probably just dumped the dog and it reached my house, but it is a, it is like a Doge, like its face is like a little Doge dog. And I'm like, this is the universe telling me I need to go buy a Doge.
Well, I think more than that. So you have kind of two environments. I don't want to get super technical because I want to talk about other topics here, but you have the BCH BTC environment. They're mining against each other. There's a lot of resentment in there, where with the miners for Litecoin, that's the algorithm. It's Dogecoin, Litecoin, like you said, Bell's coin. And it's much more of a cooperative thing. Like I feel like
maybe I'm the one that's helped push this forward, Animal, more than anybody else, is that we should be working collectively to grow these environments, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter to me if it becomes, the coin is BCH or it's Dogecoin or whatever. The one that people want to use, let them use it. I don't want to restrict people from using what they want to use. And mm-hmm. I believe Litecoin's got all the qualities that require that. But if that's not the case, then that's not the case. But people in Cuba, yeah. I don't care what you want to use. As long as you can use something that provides value for you, that's what I want you to know, that it's available. I want you to learn about it. And yeah, they're in an environment where maybe Monero is the safest thing to do. I don't know how difficult it is to use down there. I don't know how much crypto.
I think everything is difficult. And right now, like I said, the entire power grid is out. So I think, one of the real life issues with these coins in general is just that you need electricity. Electricity is what we transfer, is what we are using. I think it makes sense. We're using something, if the dollar is pegged to the petrol, then, all of these coins being pegged to electricity, I think it makes it valuable just for that. But it also, the downside is that if you don't have electricity, you can't transact. And so it's kind of a problem for Cubans in general. But there are a few people transacting in it. And as long as you're not using the Cuban coin, which is MLC or the Cuban peso, I think you're better off. But, again, power being what it is, I don't think that there's a good solution for Cube at the moment, honestly.
Yeah.
So it's too bad.
Yeah, it is. Entire island. Their estimates is 11 million people. And this week, a report came out that they say that the island is now about 8 million people because of the amount of mass migration in the last 2 years out of Cuba. So most of those people are coming here to the United States. This is what's happening. And, the more the United States doesn't help these countries, I'm a libertarian, I don't believe the United States should, but we help the regime stay in power by many of the things we do, including not allowing Cubans to just freely enter the United States like before with wet foot or dry foot. We just keep aiding the regime. And it's just such a terrible situation all the way around. And when people are like, well, generally it's the Bitcoin community, it's like, Bitcoin solves that. Tell me how will Bitcoin solve this problem? Tell me, I don't see it. I think that it will allow people to transact in a more freer way, but I don't see how exactly we're able to build that community while we still have this big, monkey on our back, which is government. And we have to solve that problem first. We have to have freedom first before we can go out and help these other communities, I think. But again, it's one of these conundrums. Like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, where do we start, and how do we actually bring freedom to people? Because ultimately, I think that's what these coins are designed for. We're not quite there yet. And just, yelling past each other and being like, well, this solves it. Okay, take that step, a few steps further. How do we solve it? How do we use it to help people in Africa, in, Central America, South America? How do we use it? And I'd love to see more thought leaders on that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it made me think, because I was going to transition to a couple other things. And I had this thought about libertarians. Do you know who Jimmy Dore is?
Of course.
Yeah. So
he was just at Rescue the Republic in DC.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
I shared his speech. It was fantastic.
There's something he says that I think is very, this harkening back a bit to Julian Assange or Ross Ulbricht, is that you never get in trouble for saying, what does he say? God, I'm going to forget it. Something like, you don't get in trouble for telling a lie. You get in trouble for telling the truth. Yeah. And that's like Julian Assange thing, right? And what he had recently on his show, he was highlighting these people who had collected a bunch of signatures to get food coloring out of cereal. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. And the doctor, they were like, what, aren't there bigger issues? Aren't there things you guys should be focused on that are bigger picture? And he's like, you know what? This is one victory. Like, it's one issue at a time. And I think that's, if I were to like dissect what's wrong with libertarianism, is trying to solve everything. Say like, we're going to get rid of the entire government. Well, that's just an impossible thing to do.
Right.
And so it's better to pick topics and say, let's show people on this one topic how free markets and freedom are a better alternative to what we had. And that on the other side of it, that everything's okay. Like it didn't break. It actually functions just as well as it did before. And it's costing us infinitely less. There's no overseer to tell you how to conduct business. For example, that's a free market thing. The people are protesting. They're making their voice known. And that should have an impact on Kellogg to say, you know what? Maybe we should get rid of these things. There's no law that needs to tell them to do that. And actually, the law would be much weaker than the free market because the law will spell out you can't use these particular things. Well, they're just going to go find another stupid ingredient to put in there that's cheap and does
like,
the thing.
Like sugar. They were like, don't put in sugar. So they put in high fructose corn syrup. Like right. They will find the alternative.
And right. It's not
rather good for you.
Rather than
canola oil too. I mean, that was, used to be like engine oil or like some machine oil, right? That they had to retrofit so that it wasn't super anti-inflammatory. It's still extremely inflammatory rather. But before they did their, before they broke down some of those molecules, it was just pure, extremely toxic. Mm-hmm. Now it's everywhere.
Yeah. And, everywhere. And the point is you're better off having an educated consumer that actually that says, I'm not going to buy that cereal because now I know about these things. But we're in such a state of, I just trust that the government's, the FDA is taking care of me. And so everybody just
response, right? Everybody was like, well, we got to trust the government.
Trust the experts.
Right, trust the experts. And that is exactly what I come across. Circumcision is one of my big issues. And it's, let me just focus on one. And I hear from everyone, aren't there bigger issues to solve? And I'm like, than male body autonomy? I don't know one that I would want. You know, I think that this is a huge issue. Because,
that's your problem. You pick men. Don't try to help men in this world.
You know, that's, I'm the mother of three boys. If I'm going to help, you know, like I have a daughter, but that's exactly it. I see my daughter and I can't imagine, you know, giving birth to a child and then immediately doing something to harm them, even if experts tell me that it's the best thing possible and it's going to solve everything from curing cancer to all STDs. And it's like, number one, you don't have any proof of that. You know, to say that a man in his 60s and 70s isn't going to get cancer because his parents, you know, cut something off of him when he was a baby is just horrific to me. Plus, we're violating body autonomy, plus all these horrible outcomes that come from this. Babies even die. They've gotten herpes from, you know, in some instances, it's a very specific Jewish tradition where the rabbi sucks the blood and some babies in New York ended up dying from herpes. So there's a whole,
you just blew animal's mind. He wasn't aware of this.
Oh yeah. There are some practices. It's a practice where the moil will you know, bite the foreskin off and suck the blood or cut the foreskin and suck the blood. And several babies actually died from herpes. And so like,
sweet Jesus. Okay.
Oh, we lost your mic. We lost your mic, Martha. Completely. Meaning like it's gone dead.
I have to use the other one. That might be a problem. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. You sound good here.
Reconnect.
I'm guessing that was tradition from like long ago to like help coagulate it and stop the bleeding or something. Like a dog would lick its wounds, but that's it.
That's messed up.
Sure.
Hang on.
Yeah, I mean, if a grown man puts his mouth on an infant's sexual organs, I think that is a problem. You know, regardless of which sex you are, I think that if you have somebody, a grown adult, putting their mouth on your sexual organs, that's a form of abuse. But it goes beyond that because it's an abuse regardless of they putting their mouth on it or not. And I don't want to get too graphic. I don't want to turn off all your audience. But right. There's sexual violence that occurs in every circumcision in order for it to happen. And it is a huge violation of human rights. It's a huge violation of men's rights. And I just want people to know that it exists so that hopefully we can use the free market to stop it. Because I don't want to involve the government. I don't think that the government is the place to do it. I think that, you know, 100% of men are born from women. And women, we make this decision for our sons primarily. So let's go ahead and create a community of women who are going to give birth one day, who are in the process of having children, and talk about this issue. And so, you know, I agree with you. If libertarians, if we can just solve one issue, maybe we can get ahead and actually provide more freedom into the world. I don't know that this is the issue that'll provide that freedom, but
it generates a conversation. It makes you look at it through a lens of no government edict, just choice. And I think that's an important conversation to have with people, because their initial reaction is like, what are you talking about? No, there's all these reasons they've been told why it should happen. And so for them just to question themselves and take a step back and go, well, maybe you're right. You know, I guess I hadn't really thought about it that way. And that's the first to maybe open the door.
You can always let your kid do it later. At 18, you can still have it done. At 21, at 25, you can still have it done. It's the question of why are you choosing this for your child without giving him the opportunity to decide.
True,
and those same
strange.
People, the same people who are like, child mutilation, we cannot allow parents to do anything to mutilate their children. But then when you tell them, but is not a surgery at birth, a cosmetic surgery at birth, a type of mutilation? They're like, no. Okay. Maybe it's just me, but I see it as the same issue. One affects up to 80% of boys born in America. The other one represents less than 1% of all children. So I'm not comparing them. I'm not saying either of them are good or bad. I'm just saying if you believe that a child at 14, 15, 13, 9, whatever number that is, cannot make this decision for himself, then surely an infant shouldn't be able to either. But okay, anyways, let's move on to the next topic, because we're
I had a question actually. I think it was on one of your posts that I saw this, that there was actually some incentive, some financial incentive for hospitals to circumcise, because they would take the donations, right? They would ask the parents if they would like to donate the foreskin and then turn around and sell it for something like $30,000.
They don't even ask for donations. Parents don't even know there's money being made all across the board. So the doctor makes money by performing the surgery. In some cases, the parents pay. Medicare pays almost across the board in all states. I think we're up to 16 states that just recently were like, you know what? If you want a circumcision, pay for it yourself. So up until very recently, the government was paying hospitals, paying doctors to have this done to your child. So if it's about your religion, then why is the United States government paying for your religious service? If it's about your choice, it's a cosmetic surgery, why is the United States government taxing me to provide the service to you? So that's right there, it's a perverse incentive for hospitals to do it, because it's very simple. And they just are like, hey, do you want your child circumcised? And most people are like, yeah, or they don't even ask. I've come across multiple instances where the parents weren't even asked. The child was simply circumcised because, you know. And so beyond that, then the hospital takes the foreskin, this sample or whatever you want to call it, and they sell it. There's an entire billion-dollar industry behind it, and that is harvesting those cells. Clearly, babies have all kinds of, you know, they're brand new, right? And everything just works fantastic. So they can use these cells, and they use them in things like face creams for women, very expensive face creams. And you have celebrities like Sandra Bullock going on the Ellen DeGeneres show saying, oh yeah, I got a face, a foreskin facial. And they were like, ha ha ha, it's so funny, it's so great. I don't find it funny and I don't find it great that they mutilated these boys so that you could look a little bit younger. And so that you can, you know, and it's again, multi-billion dollar industry, and we American taxpayers are paying for it in a lot of these cases. And furthermore, forget about the financial aspect, men are paying for it because their first moment on earth is immediately marred by a super traumatic event that they then, of course, go on the rest of their lives, putting it in the back of their mind, probably never think about it again. But if you take any child and you violate them early in life, that trauma is still there, whether they remember it or not. And so, you know, we're looking at America through this lens, and everybody's like, oh, we're so violent now, and all these things happening in our schools, and all these people are withdrawn, and we have anger issues, and we have emotional issues. I wonder if that doesn't have some part in this, you know, where that early childhood trauma is there. And so again,
you wonder if you made it a free,
was like, you wonder if you made it a free market and you said to the mother at birth, said, listen, we can give him a circumcision and we're going to sell the foreskin and it's going to make $5,000 and we'll give you $4,000 of that, something like that.
Yeah. Would
that be,
but then you could see the transaction of it and then it's like, ooh, you would sell.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean. If you put that decision, yeah, most moms would be like, of course, I'm not going to mutilate my child for $4,000. Get out of here. Are you crazy? Like, I would never.
Even a 30,000 number, even if it was true. Yeah.
What's crazy is that, so like they're doing this for the stem cells that are in the foreskin, right? Because that's what it is, isn't it? There's a bunch of stem cells there.
So. Yeah, but yeah, the crazy thing is you can get those same stem cells out of the belly, you know, out of the
afterbirth. Right. And the placenta. Yeah. The placenta. Yeah.
So that's... why are we doing this? I don't know if there's some type of specialized cell that they're trying to extract from. I don't know, because they specifically say foreskin facials. So I don't know if there's something, some type of science behind why the foreskin.
It's regulatory. It's because actually using stem cells from the umbilical cord and the placenta is, well, it's not strictly legal, but it's highly regulated. And well, in Mexico, for example, they have a structure that allows them in labs, in certified labs, to expand the stem cells from umbilical cords and placentas that make it so the yield is much larger and they can service a whole industry with it, right? There's a whole huge stem cell industry in Mexico. And yeah, whereas in North America, Canada, United States, illegal, on the basis that it's unethical. Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, at the same time, they're doing this. Yeah. And at the same time, it's, you know, it's really a symptom of regulatory capture, where you have big pharma who is in charge of the government, who has, you know, lobbyists that are bribing government officials, with power and influence, so that they can control what happens to our bodies, right? They can't patent a stem cell. It's a biologic product, a biological product. So there's no way they can, you know, trademark it and sell it, right? It's something that we grow ourselves, something that women produce, or like, you know, young women produce monthly, right? With menstrual fluid. And it's just, it's absolutely criminal. This is a technology that can really, really save healthcare in America, in Canada, like just for pain management. You know, that's why I went, my shoulder was messed up and I couldn't get even to see a specialist for like over 6 months, never mind getting the surgery that they would have recommended. And in the meantime, they just had me in anti-inflammatories, you know, messing up my whole, you know, messing up my liver, my kidneys, my, you know, my whole body, basically. Whereas, yeah, in Mexico, you know, I just went down there. They gave me a couple injections. And within 6 months, you know, I was back playing sports and whatnot, you know?
Wow.
So, amazing. Yeah.
I mean, and I think you touched on so many issues there, because here in America, we'll give you opioids and tell you that a plant like cannabis is terrible for you. Meanwhile, the opioids, fantastic. Please have some more. So, you know, there's so many issues with the healthcare system in America, so many of them.
They blame the fentanyl crisis on the border, right? Yeah. They keep saying, it's like, yeah, it's coming, but dude, like, you're prescribing it. Like, how do you think people get hooked on it in the first place?
You're uncut.
Yeah, you know?
They're uncut stuff, and then they have to go and find heroin on the streets because they get cut off, you know, because our laws are such. So
they're creating the demand. Such hypocrisy. Yeah,
it is. It is such a terrible thing, and it's about the money. And so if you follow the money, you realize that it's not about your health. It's not about your well-being. It's not about what's best for the American people. It's literally about how they're going to make more money. And, you know, unfortunately, it's on the backs of babies in this case. They're making a lot of money off of your children and selling something that should never have been taken from your children. And so... I don't blame people who have done it, because, you know, or had it done to them, or, you know, are kind of asleep and they just go through the motions. But if I accomplish something in this world, I hope to accomplish to wake people up and at least have them question it. If you still decide to do it, you know, I can't stop you, but I would love to be the catalyst that starts at least the conversation on this subject, because we're all talking about seed oils and we're all talking about, you know, big pharma and how they don't have any repercussions for what they did and have done. Well, you know, this is kind of a big deal. And again, There was a point in time where over 80% of every single child born in an American hospital had this done to them. Today, we're looking at about 50%. And so it's definitely on a trend. Countries like Australia used to perform it routinely, and today they don't at all. It's frustrating and everything, but I do think that Americans have the possibility of waking up, and hopefully that'll lead to then saying, what else have I been lied to? Which is where I'm hoping to go with all of this. It's pointing out the glaring problem so that then hopefully people will be like, oh, wait, if that's that, then what about this? And because once you see one thing, I don't know for you guys, but nobody's born into freedom, right? Nobody's born with this freedom mentality, but you see one thing and you're like, huh. And then you see something else and you're like, that sounds like this other thing. And then you just kind of keep going down the rabbit holes. And I think that that's hopefully where we're going with this.
We'll bring it back to Jimmy Dore. I brought up an episode he did recently about statins. You know, the overprescription of statins. And I shared it with my mom and she was like, you know, it's funny. She's a 76, but rarely, she's a person that doesn't take any medication at 76. Her doctors think she's like this anomaly. She had this, blood pressure or whatever it was. I forget the reason they do it. Yeah. Blood pressure, I think. And they put her on one and she watched this and she goes, you know, the next time I went in, I asked the doctor, like, can you take me off of it? Like I really need to have it? And they're like, well, I guess maybe not. You don't really need to.
Same thing with my mom, actually.
High cholesterol. And, you know, you find out that those statins create problems in their brain, which is potentially the cause of brain decay, you know, of these type of your brain starts deteriorating. And you're like, so maybe that high cholesterol, that high blood pressure, whatever it is that they gave it to them, really wasn't the big issue that we needed this prescription. Yeah. But where do we go from here, you know?
Well, but it was encouraging that my parents are boomers, boomer. They are the boomer. If you were to define a boomer, they're boomers. And, that's at 76, she questioned it. She watched that and went, oh, you know what? They're probably right. Or like, I've given her some things too about even like the development of polio vaccine and some of the things that the history behind that. Brett Weinstein had a great episode about that. And I think she's willing now to accept, okay, there's maybe some things I've been lied to about and I need to be willing to, the information's out there. And if the doctor told me I need to do something, I should go do a little research. Are you a doctor? No, you should certainly trust that your doctor's has your best interest at heart, but also know that they are only this vessel to pass information through, right? They're not capable of knowing everything.
Right. It's not, and it's aren't even taught. You know,
it's like, insane when you see like drug companies sponsoring CNN and like they're controlling the message. Yeah. It's insane. Like, how is this not illegal?
COVID. We saw it over COVID. You know, it was like this news about COVID brought to you by Pfizer. Are you insane? Are we insane? But I'm so glad that your mom was receptive to it and seeing the truth behind this. And I think that that's, you know, people are like dismissive. Well, they're never going to learn. People learn. We all learn. We all see things. And that's my point. You show them one thing, whatever that one thing that causes
one
them.
One thread.
Right.
They start to pull on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were on me about the vaccine. They were like going to pay me to take the vaccine. I was like, guys, and I was like, you don't know how much I've read about this. I've watched. So because I was like very early on with COVID, I knew there was something goofy with the math because they were comparing it to the flu. And I was like, well, nobody gets the flu and you don't go report that you got the flu. You just get it. You stay home. Like if everybody's actively reporting every single case of COVID, of course it's going to seem like this crazy high number because no one reports these things. You just stay home.
The flu ended over COVID.
I know. I feel like we could have a whole COVID episode, Martha.
Funny because
Go ahead. Just this week,
I was talking to my mom over Thanksgiving dinner. I'm Canadian, so we had it last week, right?
I was going to say last year. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
No, last week. It was recent. She saw something on TV. I'm not sure what channel, some news channel, maybe Canadian. But you know the way they have those drug testing trials where you can sign up to test a drug out and they'll pay you like $2,000 or something? There's this report that this news agency was doing and they went and investigated this investigative report. And they found a case. Well, they uncovered basically that patients were not basically were not telling the drug companies, the doctors, about the side effects that they were feeling, because it turns out that if they did start complaining about side effects, they'd be pulled from the trial and then not paid for the whole trial. They would stop at halfway or wherever they stopped or wherever they started getting side effects at. So there's this baked in incentive that's really twisted and perverted for people to suffer through these trials so they can pay their rent, meanwhile hiding symptoms and side effects from the researchers, you know, totally nullifying the results of the study. And they go out and they sell these things that really haven't been properly tested because the patients are incentivized to hide the data, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this one case that she was telling me about a young man who was experiencing side effects. You know, he had like high blood pressure, he was sweating, he wasn't feeling well, but he hid it until at some point, you know, the trial researchers did check his blood pressure. They brought him in, they're like, there's something messed up, like your blood pressure is off the charts, you know, your heart rate is going wild. And they sent him in an Uber to an ER, at which point, you know, he spent a couple of days there where he died finally from this thing. Yeah. I wish I had a link to that, but I'll ask my mom after the show.
That's
and I'll
wild.
Post it. But yeah, it's insane. When you think about like the incentive structures, the way they're set up, they're not looking out for our best interests. The drug companies they're smart. These are scientists, right? They're like, they hire the best and brightest, right? Supposedly, probably, ethically.
They may or may not, but they have such financial incentives. They pay off the mm-hmm. government. They create these things. And what's the worst that can happen? It'll just cost them a few billion, you know, if they have to pay out a claim at some point, you know, class action.
It's a white collar crime.
Right. And they make so many more billions. I mean, the COVID vaccines made hundreds of billions of dollars for them. So if they end up paying, you know, what is the largest payout they've ever had, like $4 billion or whatever. I mean, when you look at the differential, it's a no brainer. You're going to make mm-hmm. more money than this is going to cost you. And they don't value human life. So, you know, it just goes back to that. Yes, trust your doctor, but you have to understand that doctors aren't necessarily taught all the things. And so, for example, one of the just clearest things we've known about the human endocannabinoid system discovered in the 90s, in the mm-hmm. 1990s. And from the 1990s, we're in 2024. You're going to tell me why don't any medical textbooks have this system in them? And it's because they're not interested. So it turns out that humans have an entire system where cannabis plays a part with it. And I believe it's not necessarily from smoking. Cannabis used to be found pretty much on every continent, and animals would eat it. I had a farm where I got the license to grow hemp, which is cannabis, just less amount of THC. And my dad, as a farmer, had cattle on the farm. And I had to put a barbed wire because they were like, they loved this thing. They would, if it was up to them, they would have eaten all my plants.
Again.
They loved it. They love the taste of it. They love everything. I mean, it's not decarboxylated, so they definitely weren't getting high.
Oh, okay.
So it makes you think where, why? And I believe, you know, our founding fathers, there was a law back then, a rule, that if you had 10 hectares, you had to grow hemp on a part of it. Everybody did. Our constitution was written on hemp Ooh. Paper. So cattle were eating this. Our food source, this was very much a part of our food source, which is something else.
Hemp,
you know, like
hemp-fed beef, that sounds delicious.
It does sound delicious. And probably really good for you. A great anti-inflammatory. So, you know, just, these people are not incentivized to do what's best for us. And they're not even taught. So how does your doctor tell you to take an opioid, you know, that when you need an anti-inflammatory, which it's certainly not, when there's something much less dangerous, much less likely to get hooked, that will also help with your inflammation and help your body regulate itself. But they don't know this. It's not even taught in school. So, you know, I think libertarians or people who have woken up, sometimes we're like, we're the kooks out there, you know, we're the wild child, whatever. But at the same time, if you don't research your own stuff, if you don't know what's going on, you're just going to be lied to. And you're mm-hmm. at the mercy of these people to make decisions for you.
Yeah, the majority of people, you know, what's the expression? Open your mouth. They keep their mouths open and close their eyes. something, something lies, whatever. Anyways, yeah, most people are just, you know, they just watch the news, accept it as truth. They don't question it. Until that one thread gets pulled. For me, I think it was Bitcoin, right? Like I got into Bitcoin relatively early, and I started, you know, kind of opened my eyes. I was like, wow, this is really cool. And then I started to see reports on the news channels, and they were just bashing it nonstop, lying about it, straight up lying about what it was, what it could do, what it couldn't do, and omitting all the positive aspects of it, right? Mm-hmm. Unilaterally. And so that kind of really, that's where my distrust for the media came from. And then as time went on, you know, I started to see it everywhere. I was like, man, these guys are talking out of both sides of their mouths. They're total hypocrites. And you start to, you know, you follow these breadcrumbs, you know, and eventually get led down this libertarian thing, right? Or like maybe a certain political aspect of it, right? And, you know, I don't know. It's just how do you,
the media thing you evolve from, this is a lie of omission, or this is they're just incompetent, they didn't do their work, to eventually start going, no, they're proactively pushing their
own agenda.
Yeah. That's when you start to really turn. You got to really be distrustful of all media. I mean, honestly, I always say about me, question what I say. You should question me all the time. Absolutely. Don't think I'm telling you the truth, right?
Yeah. Don't question me.
Each other all the time. But I don't think it's necessarily the media. The media is just an extension of the government. And we saw over the Twitter files. They are literally told. I mean, you can look. There's so many compilation videos where a news comes out and every news channel says the same thing in the same voice with the same words. We saw it with J.D. Vance, how he was, quote, weird. You know, we see that those words just repeated, and it all comes from the same source, which is the government.
Yeah.
And so at some point, we're going to have to learn this lesson, how we get there, you know. And
they don't get in trouble for telling lies. They'll get in trouble if they tell the truth.
And that is 100% the truth. You know, be careful with the truth you tell.
It's when you're personally affected that you start to, it's only when it starts to affect you negatively, right? That you start like questioning, like, but wait a minute, that hurts. Why are you doing this to me?
Taxation. Yeah. People that don't pay taxes are like, well, the rich people can pay more. And then they get a really nice job that pays them a really nice amount. And they start, 50% of their income goes to tax. They're like, wait a minute, this taxation thing doesn't really work out for me. And it's like, oh, I see. Yeah. Welcome to the club. Once you start becoming, you know, the people that fund the government versus the one who just takes from the government, it changes your mindset. I think that's across the board. Once it affects you, you know, you look at kids. My best is every time when my kids start getting their first job, and it's like they bring home a paycheck and they work. So they're like, you know, yay, I was going to get paid X number of dollars the hour. And then their paycheck reflects a lot less than that. It's like,
well, hey, let's
transition to the real world.
I want to cover one last topic before we end, and it's the THC conversation, because I noticed on your, you sell some sort of, maybe get into that, but maybe to understand it first, what are the variants? Because I'll give you my personal experience. It wasn't anything a part of my life growing up. Of course I had friends that did it and all that type of stuff. More recently, I've actually oddly, like after 40, and I don't know why, I don't know what it was. It might even been this cannabinoid thing. I used CBD oil for pain, and I was so blown away, like how effective it was. And I had somebody at work that exposed me to that research that I was like, wait, they really discovered a new system. Like I thought that stuff all got discovered hundreds of years ago. And so maybe just the comfort level with it. It's not something I do all that often, but, what are the different variants? Like, what is the science behind it? Like Delta 8, Delta 9, THC, hemp, CBD. What are these differences? Do you have that information? I don't know if I'm asking.
Yeah, of course. So I did have a company from this, but I closed down. It's now defunct. I have to remove it off of all my social media. But one of the lessons learned is don't start a business that the government and a big monopoly doesn't like you to be in, because it will cost you a lot of money and produce no good results. So because of this, I've learned a lot. And so what is the difference between CBD and THC? So they're all coming from the same plant, which is the Cannabis sativa A plant. It's all the same thing. The differentiation is really a U.S. government thing. Hemp There are different plants. They do look a little different and whatnot. Some are used for fiber. Some are used for the flower. And then the real differentiation is how much THC is in it. THC is a substance that will get you high. But it was discovered that there are over 120 different cannabinoids in the plant. And it seems like almost every day we discover a new cannabinoid or what it's good for. So some varieties of plants, before people used to think that indica was like, and it was like in the couch, right? It's the one that brings you down. Well, it turns out that it's more than that. It's what cannabinoids are in that specific strain. So if you have a cannabinoid, for example, like CBG or CBN rather, and it's high in CBN, it'll cause you to fall asleep or feel really tired. So they've been able to isolate CBN. And because of the laws in this country, they isolate it from hemp, which is low THC, so that they can sell it without. In 2018, the Farm Bill made it legal in all 50 states. So some states have gone ahead and made it illegal because it interferes with their cannabis businesses, Colorado being one. They made Delta 8 completely illegal because, you know, they have legal cannabis and they don't need any competition for the ones that they're already extorting. So, but there are several different things. So for me, Delta 8, the reason I launched a Delta 8 product when I did was because for me, Delta 8 is exactly like THC minus the anxiety. A lot of people that I know that were trying out cannabis for the first time were getting a lot of anxiety. And for me, Delta 8, I'm a nervous flyer. It was what I was using to fly because it didn't provide me with that. You know, I'd have a nice chill and I wasn't anxious. There are some synthetic ones, which I don't recommend, anything with an O at the end of it, like THCO. Those are synthetic. They do not exist in nature. You're going to want to try things that exist in nature. So CBG is one that I came across because a lot of people have gastrointestinal problems, and it's really good for that. THCV is good for focus. It's also great for weight loss. It could be because it takes your focus off of thinking about food, or it could be because it's the opposite of the munchies. We're not sure the reason behind it, but it is absolutely great for that.
Can I ask you something? Are these, so they're able to basically isolate these cannabinoids, which I'm assuming are some kind of like protein or chemical, whatever.
I'm not the chemist. So on the chemistry part of it, I just know that we've isolated them.
Yeah. So they isolate it. And do they generally then grow a strain that eliminate certain, like, you know, almost like they do don't. The science experiment, or do they actually just extract it and put it into like a gummy or a liquid?
They extract it, but they don't extract it. They convert it. So very much like if you take a vanilla product, for example, if you go to Publix or whatever supermarket and buy vanilla, you're not actually buying vanilla extracted from a vanilla bean. It is actually converted, right? When you take a vitamin C, it's not that somebody pushed in a whole bunch of oranges into a tablet. It has been, through a chemical process, converted from something else. That is what these are. So they take CBD because it's legal and they put it through a chemical process and convert it into Delta. Like, they can convert it into literally all of these. It is not commercially viable to have a strain of CBN, for example, because there is no strain that would be just that. And because cannabis is illegal in most parts of the country, but hemp isn't, they've been able to just figure out the chemical process. In a free world where the free market actually worked and we were, you know, actually able to do these things, I'm sure that there would be strains. They'd probably be high in THC to get there, but they work together. There's also this effect that they found called the entourage effect. So for example, if you were taking routinely that CBD for your pain that you mentioned, over time it would wear off and you would realize that you need THC with the CBD for your pain. You'd also probably find that CBC, a strain high in CBC would be even better for you because it's even better for pain. So over time, we're going to keep discovering these things and we're going to keep finding and probably this technology, you know, 10 years from now will be incredibly better or not if we allow the monopoly on the cannabis companies through the U.S. government to persist. So this is all research in Israel. Israel is at the forefront in all of this because they don't have this illegal system the way we do. So
I was just about to ask that. Is there like a mecca for like this research that is allowed to flourish? And also, is there a place to go to learn about these different, like, do you use a particular website or is it going to be hunting? Maybe AI? Is AI good about extracting that information?
I'm not sure if AI is, as long as maybe if there's an AI that reads all the studies coming out than it would be. But, you know, I think your best spot is to look for publications coming out of Israel for this news, because, you know, they've just been doing it for so long, so much more than us. And they have not had this issue. In the United States, it's actually illegal to do any research on cannabis because it's federally illegal, even though the government does do research and they spend their money doing research on it. It's not necessarily something that they're using bunk weed, basically. They're not using the best that they can. So I highly recommend people going to do research in other countries where, like Israel, where it's done. We're just not being told the truth, and you kind of have to go look for it, and you have to learn to read these papers, and they're very technical, and it's just hard. Yeah, it's just really hard.
It's crazy to think, like, the two topics we've touched on are, you know, stem cells and hemp and or whatever, the variants of CBD and THC.
Yeah, research is outlawed.
Like, how much, if it was untethered research, just allowed to go, these evil companies, you know, they would invest a lot of money to find the best solution.
The United States government has a patent on cannabis, and the United there are at least two medications that have FDA approval that are based on cannabis. Marinol is one of them. It is a synthetic version of cannabis, and it's given to patients, and it's completely legal for them to write a prescription and give it out. But the actual plant is not, and it's an expensive drug. I mean, I remember a good friend of mine whose son has been on cannabis for Dravet syndrome, one of the most extreme forms of epilepsy, since he was about two. She was put on a Marinol trial, and she was telling me, if not for the trial, it costs about $40,000 a month. So, I mean, you're talking about a plant that you could grow for free in your backyard and extract it for pennies, but they're telling you to go use the synthetic version that is super expensive. So, I mean, our incentives are perverse, and there's no better way to just, you know, our incentives are perverse.
It just, 'cause you asked earlier, Grant, I checked on PPQ, right? Yeah. Our friend Matt's
PPQ.ai. Martha, if you want to use Litecoin or any, I think, what cryptos does he take? I think Monero. You can deposit.
He takes a bunch, and even like Ethereum based. I think.
Huh?
He takes a bunch, even Ethereum based stuff here. Let me see. Yeah, he's got USDT, Litecoin, Bitcoin, Dogecoin.
Do you know these like pay per use AI you can get out there, Martha?
Like ChatGPT, sure.
Well, so you can get the top. You can get the top of the line, but instead of having to pay a monthly fee, you just use some of these services where you pay per post. So this one's called PPQ, pay per query. AI, and so it's like I'm using the best AI for a tenth of a penny per question.
Right? Non KYC. So
you don't have to reveal your information, no credit cards, anything like that. Yeah. So very cool use case for crypto.
Mind blown. Okay, I shall try starting using them. I paid ChatGPT because I didn't realize, but that's expensive.
Yeah.
Check it out.
The cool thing is you can also, like, let's say you want to do image generation. It gives you a menu of here's 10 image generators you can choose from. And an image might cost you like a nickel or something, but if it sits and doesn't get used for a while, it doesn't cost you anything. You just use it at your convenience. And the Open 4.0 or the mini 4.0 ChatGPT I've been using recently, it's costing me a tenth of a penny for every question I have. So it's like, it's super, super efficient way to utilize a technology that can get costly. And again, confusing because there's so many there's so many of them. You're like, I don't even know. There's a long way.
And I'm old, okay? This type of like technology stuff, like I spend my time researching, you know, like, circumcisions, and I don't research technology.
But AI could be a big help for you in that, right?
Absolutely.
Like, to be able to, can you point me in a direction or where are these discovering these perverse incentives? You
know? I'll say like this question I asked about the THC, I used the model 01 preview, which is I think the best model currently. It's capable of like PhD level research, which is kind of mind blowing. It costs 33.6 cents.
That's the expensive.
So it's expensive.
Mini is the good. But anyway, what did it tell you? What did it knock out?
It told a whole bunch of stuff. I can paste it to you somewhere, but not Yeah. It basically goes on, tells us about Delta 9, Delta 8, Delta 10, THCV, THCA, THCP, HHC.
THCA is the precursor to THC, which is how most of the smoke shops around the United States are getting around the laws. You can go to pretty much any smoke shop right now and purchase. Well, I know you're in Canada, but the rest of us, the plebs who can't, we can go to any smoke shop and pretty much purchase THCA, which is the legal hemp version of cannabis. And once you light it, it becomes THC. And yeah, you know, like all of these. So and you did say Delta 9. Delta 9 is just the name for THC. That is Delta 9. So Delta 9, THC, interchangeable. But Delta 9 generally, when people say that, generally they mean it was converted from CBD, although not always. Just so you know, those are the
same. I'm in Ohio. It's illegal in Ohio. But out of the blue, like 6 months ago, I go to our local independent grocery store and they've got the beverages with like THC and CBD in them. And I'm like, it's right next to the sports drinks. I'm like, how is this legal?
Because it's a percentage. It's under 0.3% of the can is THC, probably, if it's a legal
but
product.
But I'm going to tell you what, it ain't acting like that. It acts like once it's 5 milligrams THC, that's what it feels like to me.
Well, here's the thing, that can is heavy. That can is pretty heavy. So the 0.3 is probably more than enough to get somebody who doesn't smoke regularly high, right?
So it says 5 milligrams. It's just the volume as a total volume, I see.
Right. Yeah, so if the can is, you know, I'm not going to do math on the spot, but it has to be 0.3% of the volume of the can is can be THC. You're fine. But they can also blend the cannabinoids. So you can put in there, you know, 8, 9, 10, whatever, and give you even higher of a buzz with the small, you know, adding those percentages in. So there's loopholes. Guys, the free market, like people will try and create things. And unfortunately, shortly, we'll probably see the alcohol companies coming after those brands and burying them, which is basically what happens to people like me and people that create those products. You create a product, and if you can't grow fast enough, those companies will crush you. I spent the beginning part of this year in Tallahassee fighting because in Florida, they were trying to ban hemp outright after they gave us a license. So after producing a product legally with all of the permissions of the Florida government, then they decided to turn around and make it illegal. And they did. The law passed until Governor DeSantis vetoed it. But for about 3 months or so, nobody was purchasing because, well, now it's an illegal product. So, you know, they will do all these things to try and beat any competition out of the market. And
it's funny you mentioned the alcohol aspect because, you know, I'm a drinker. I like to drink beer, and I drink a lot less if I have one of those cans. I can tell you that. Like a lot because less.
Alcohol companies want to stay in business, and they know that cannabis is their number one competitor. Cannabis has been shown, people who smoke or drink or whatever, that, you know, cannabis products versus alcohol tend to consume less alcohol. I think Canada is a perfect example of that. In Canada, once legalization happened, alcohol consumption dropped quite a bit. So it's one of those things where we can see it happening. It actually helps with people who are on opioids too. A lot of opioid users switch over from opioid to cannabis and are no longer dependent. So of course these industries are going to fight against that thing that could potentially lower their profits. Your cats are going wild.
You can hear? I'm so sorry.
Your mic, come on. Your mic got really loud too. I don't know why. Aww. But yep. Yeah.
What kind of cat? Is that a Persian?
It's a Devon Rex.
Oh, my
God. Say hi, Kiki. Say hi.
Okay. Oh, how cute. Absolutely precious. I'm sorry. I love animals. Like I said, a dog just showed up on my house on Wednesday. And I'm like, well, I tried to find the owner. Not finding the owner, I'm like, well, I guess you're mine now.
What did you name it?
We haven't named it yet because I didn't want to name it until I figured that it was that we couldn't find the owner. And I what I discovered is that it probably has some issues with its hind legs, and it was probably a puppy mill puppy that they just dumped because, you know, it's harder to feed him, or they definitely can't sell it because it has a defect. So they're, you know, my gain, I guess. But I do love animals. It's my weak spot. I'm a sucker for animals. People drop cats around my area, and they always end up in my house. And, you know, I take them in, get them spayed or neutered, and then just feed them until, you know. live out their lives here, I guess. But it just, it drives me crazy. It drives me crazy that there's so many people that are so irresponsible. They'll buy a puppy and, or they'll, you know, create one potentially if this was a puppy mill puppy. Cause it is a very particular breed. It's a type of Shiba Inu. It's a variation of it. So it's a very particular puppy. I'm sure that I could find the breeder if I look into it. But yeah, it's just, I'm a sucker for animals. I'm a sucker for babies. I'm a sucker for animals. So I saw your cat and I'm like, oh, I've been watching it roaming around in the background. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, so cute.
He's our mascot, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kiki?
Yeah.
Right. Kiki.
She, parent. She, yeah. No, I got a heated mat up there on that shelf. So, it's getting cold here in Canada. So she really enjoys that. But, awesome. She's a super good cat, just really likes attention, needs attention, craves it. And she had a ton of energy this morning. I played with her a bit. She was pretty nice for most of the show, but yeah, I guess she's hungry or something now. I don't know.
She's like over it. She's like, listen, I've given you your space. It's my turn now.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's Martha. I really appreciate you coming in. It was a lot of fun talking to you. Sometimes we get people and it's hard to get anything out of them. Not so with you. I feel the same way. I like to talk to, so I appreciate it was really a good conversation. And you know, maybe we'll have you back if we have some other topics that come up you want to cover.
I'd love to. And let me know when you're doing one of the spaces. You know, add me
every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. But I'll share it with you next time. I do them at night.
You remember, because I'd love to stop in. You know, I absolutely take full responsibility of not learning about Litecoin. I should know more, you know, but I feel like I'm kind of one of those people where you have to like lead the horse to the water. And then I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
No, I get it. I get it. I think you'll find that, you know, Litecoin community were also like the rejects of the Bitcoiners, right? They shit on Litecoin. But what you'll find is that, you know, the people that are here for the right reasons. Of course, there's speculators. There's always people like, hey, to the moon, whatever. But the reality is we like to talk about how this stuff really impacts people's lives. And the issues you're talking about are very much aligned with personal freedom. Oh. And
how have I not known about this? Like, duh. And
we're being censored, you know? By the Bitcoiners. The Maxis are changing the narrative. You know, SegWit, which was necessary for the inception of Lightning, the Lightning Network, was only made possible because of Charlie Lee and Litecoin. But ask any Maxi and they'll conveniently forget that ever happened.
Well, so Charlie Lee created Litecoin. He basically, if you want to call it a copy paste, it was essentially a copy paste of Bitcoin. And there's a lot of controversy around this change to the code that it would ruin the security of it. And so since they're so similar, Charlie Lee said, you know, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to create SegWit on Litecoin and I'm going to put $1 million in an account. If you think you can crack it, go for it, because it's not going to happen. That's kind of confidence he had. And because he did that and no one could access that $1 million, then that's what kind of let the exchanges and everybody feel confident that if they did the same thing on Bitcoin, that it wouldn't cause any problems. So, he famously, the thing that people will crap on Charlie Lee about is that he sold his coins and he very publicly said, I'm distancing myself from being a holder because I feel like it can cause him political issues. He was concerned about being this massive holder and he felt like it should be able to fly on its own, right? This Absolutely. Is a decentralized system. I don't want to be seen as this like Bitcoin, Litecoin Jesus, right?
He didn't want to be seen as pumping his own bags either.
Yeah he didn't want to be perceived as like a shill for his own coin. So he said, you know, I want to take a step back from being so publicly vocal about it. And I just wanted, you know, he still works. He donates. You know, I think he committed to $250,000 a year. He's donating to development for things like MWeb and adoption and that type of stuff. So he's still active, but
is people he on just social people, media?
Yeah. Yeah. He's yes. Satoshi Lite, LITE. So,
okay, I got to see if I follow him already.
He's got a million followers. He's pretty, he was much more active back in the day, but, I think
he's still around. Probably, he posts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just I like will definitely start doing my research. You know, I really appreciate not just having this great conversation where I hope I didn't get you guys censored with all the like the government sucks stuff, but I absolutely feel like I learned quite a bit. And yeah, I'm eager to keep learning about it because you never know. And I do feel like diversity. Like, I remember back in the day when, like, Bitcoiners started coming after me, when I was like, what about this Monero thing for Cuba? Because we can't have, like, everything. Like, people who receive Bitcoin could then be targeted in Cuba. And they're like, you know, F you and you suck for, like, even thinking about anything that's not Bitcoin. And it's like, wait a minute, they all have different applications. Let's, like, explore what that application could be used for.
There are some Monero folks doing, like, a mesh network in Cuba.
They take now all forms pretty much because they just couldn't hack it alone on Monero. There's not enough Monero users, but they are doing amazing. They have provided unrestricted internet to about 100 people at this point in Cuba, which is something unheard of. You know, even the United States government has come out and said at some points, like, we're going to provide Wi-Fi. Maria Elvira Salazar, our one of our senators here, is like, we should be providing Cuba with, like, Starlink or some type of internet so that the people can see. And it's like, the United States hasn't done it, but this community of Monero was able to do it. Yeah. So I think it's just awesome. I mean, what a great group of people to be a part of, you know?
And Starlink's
decentralized Wi-Fi that they've got in Cuba or something?
Yeah, they're building a mesh network. I think they're doing it for a community of, like, kids, like 16-year-olds or roughly around those ages, so that they can actually have access to the internet and actually study things beyond what the government tells them that is true. You know, up until, I think it was about 2018 that Cuba started allowing cell phones and a little bit of Wi-Fi. And that has changed everything in Cuba. Because people in Cuba believe that everybody in the world lived like them. They believe that everybody all around the world had to make lines all day to get food. And then all of a sudden, Cubans that were in Miami posting on Facebook are like, oh, look at me at Publix buying, you know, all this food. And they're like, wait a minute, you don't live the way I do. And you just left Cuba 2, 3, 5 years ago, and now you have all this food and these things. And it started changing and creating a revolution in Cuba, which now they're trying to crack back down on.
Good.
I think she had another phone call.
It's changing. It's definitely changing the landscape of the world, and I'm here for it. Let's go. I want to see how much trouble we can get into. How much, you know? I always reference Ross Ulbricht as my Neo. If anyone's seen the Matrix movies, which amongst us nerds, who hasn't? To me, Ross Ulbricht is my Neo. He definitely showed that what the Matrix was made of, and how many, you know, Andersons out there, agent, you know,
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, I love this community. I think it's so wild. And especially hearing that Litecoin is more of this, that's it. I'm sold. I don't even need to know about the financials of the coin. I just like the communities that have.
Just know that it's being used. And we're focused on the, you know.
Adoption.
Adoption, bringing it to people. And I want to reverse the phrase bank the unbanked. That was a tagline for a long time. I think we should be more focused on unbanking the banked. So getting people who are so caught up in this current system to say, you know what, I'm just going to walk away from it. It's hard to do. We live a life of comfort. We have so much at our fingertips. It's hard to maybe say, I'm going to take a step back and disconnect from system I don't agree with.
So it's, how do we create a Litecoin community where everyone lives in the same place and doesn't get Waco'd? I think that's the real.
Well, when I say a community though, I use the word diaspora, but you said diaspora. I think when I say that, I don't mean that they all have to be in one place. I think
it helps.
It helps. Well, no, it doesn't, because then they just put a fence around you. You got to make it so that it's so common and that I am your neighbor.
I
like him and he's a Litecoiner. Okay. He's not the thing that is in the newspaper, that he's not trafficking children or using it to buy illegal weapons or an Iranian warlord or something, right? He's my neighbor and he believes these things and he seems like a pretty decent guy. I'll go ask him about it. I'll get the real truth from him and trust my neighbor and not what I'm being told. You know, trusting your neighbor, like, that's another big thing I'm trying to focus on, is trust that the people around you are good people. Even if the yard sign says Trump or the yard sign says Harris Waltz, doesn't make him a bad person. You just, we can have conversations. We can disagree on things, but don't make them your enemy. Cause that's what the media wants you to do, is believe that if you're not wearing a mask, you're some sort of diseased non-vaxxer and you should be culled with the rest of them.
We're going long. Yeah. I don't know if you want to get into that, but
I like to keep these under two, and I actually have to go see, I'm going to with my dad to get lunch here in a little bit. So,
let's
covered a lot.
There's another subject there, which is the government wanted to take the position of removing society, like those connections that you're talking about, where you could go to your neighbor and rely on them, where you could trust your family, where, you know, your family was what solved all those problems for you. The government is trying to take that place of community. So we'll save it for next time, but there's definitely
our own cultural revolution.
Maybe we'll do a quarter one, maybe January. Maybe like a quarterly check-in with Martha. See what new topics she has to talk about. But all right, well, so thanks again. I appreciate it. I always tell people I'm going to end the stream, but you'll stay on here, Martha, just for a little bit. We'll chit-chat afterward. But
all right.
So everybody, thank you for showing up, and I hope this was informative. I thought it was a great conversation, and we'll broaden our reach a bit. So have a good one. And I had a tagline I wanted to start saying. Oh. I bought recently a vitamin D light. I don't know if you guys know this. Like, you can get a UVB rays. There's only one company that makes UV light that actually converts into vitamin D. You can just have it like in your bathroom, turn it on for like 3-5 minutes a day. Anyway, get natural vitamin D that your body produces instead of like. So get your vitamin D, go get out in the sunshine. That's going to be my new tagline, because sunshine solves a lot of your health issues. So go get some sun, and have a good one. Talk to you guys later. It takes 2 seconds to